Hello, hello, everybody. This is Matthew Albrock from the Peace Alliance. Welcome, welcome. Glad to see so many folks popping on. We had our action teams introduce themselves, some of them, and some new ones are popping on. We all know you're here, and we're happy to see you. But welcome. Today is our monthly Peace Alliance action team call. Again, I'm Matthew Albrock. Bob Baskin, our president, and Dan Collin, our field director, who usually lead this call, are both traveling right now, so I'll be leading the call today. In fact, Dan Kahn, I'll share a little bit more about it in a minute, is on a national tour. He's been going all around the country doing group starts with action teams. I know many of the action teams that are on right now have seen him recently. And so it's going really well, doing really good. But just want to welcome everybody both on the action teams and those of you who aren't on the action teams. We're glad to have you on the call with us. I'll quickly go over the agenda, and then we'll dive into the call. So as most of you have already seen, our guest speakers today are Hart Phoenix and Jeffrey Weisberg of the River Phoenix Center for Peacebuilding. Really excited to hear what they've got going on in Gainesville, Florida and beyond, and hear what's happening in the peacebuilding world there. And that'll be the first half of the call. Then on the second half of the call, we'll be looking at how we can all become champions for all this peacebuilding work we've been talking about. Specifically, we'll hear some grassroots victories from some of our action teams around the country. We'll look at our monthly action, which is writing our senators on the Youth Promise Act. And then after the call, if anyone wants to learn more about action teams, I'll be available to chat about that if anybody wants to hear more and see what it takes to get involved. Just a quick note, we're going to be looking at our March action sheet together in about 30 minutes, 45 minutes. So if you haven't yet and you have easy computer access, if you would just go to our website, which is peacealliance.org, and on the home page on the right-hand side, there's a red kind of a ribbon that says monthly action. If you click on that, you can download our action sheet. That'll be good for everybody to kind of have open and see, especially our action teams, as we'll be taking the action together after the call. So again, welcome. Just before I introduce our great speakers today, I want to share a little context about this call and why we're doing it. Hart and Jeffrey know a lot about our network. Obviously, they've been deeply involved for years. I'll share more about that in just a minute. But for anyone new on this call, I want you to know the kind of folks that you're going to be hearing today and that you're joined with on this call. And a little story to sort of set that up. Earlier this week, our Peace Alliance president, Bob Baskin, was telling me about an interview he'd seen on The Daily Show with Congressman John Lewis, which I subsequently went and watched on the Internet. And any of you can. It was a great interview. And in the interview, they were discussing the 50th anniversary of the Selma Bridge March in Alabama. And during the interview, John Stewart, as part of the conversation, showed a photo of the march in which a state trooper was clearly beating the congressman. But he noticed that Mr. Lewis had his hands in his pocket while this was happening. And he asked him what was going on for him in that moment. And Mr. Lewis indicated that, you know, the marchers were so quiet and peaceful that day. He remarked that he and the marchers were deeply committed to Martin Luther King's philosophy of nonviolence, and he was not going to do anything that could be construed as attempting to fight back. You know, even though on that day Mr. Lewis had suffered a fractured skull and he was sent to the hospital, he certainly could have died. Many other civil rights in the civil rights movement certainly did, and that was a very, very violent day in terms of what was happening to the nonviolent protesters. And it really struck both Bob and I how committed and passionate Congressman Lewis was for his cause in the face of so much adversity. And yet at the same time, what an amazing difference he and so many others made for our nation and the world against what seemed like insurmountable odds. But as Dr. King so eloquently shared in one of his most famous quotes, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice." Love that quote, because it's really true. Things always are bending towards what's good when we really put our hearts and minds towards something. There are always lots of bumps on the road, but it does bend towards justice. And, you know, the story really just reminded us of our work together. It both gave us a jolt of energy and perspective as we move forward, and just a sense of how honored we are to be working with all of you and to be in this beloved community together, as Dr. King would say. So many folks are working so hard, committing serious time in your life and your energy to this work for peace. And we really are on the leading edge of this movement for peace building. We're literally creating it together. And it's not just us, there's so many others, but you know, we're a part of a long lineage of movers and shakers who are committing themselves to creating social change. And it's important work, this cause for peace building. It's vastly underserved in comparison to the challenges of violence that we face, but I and many of us believe that we're up to the task, and I'm really inspired to be in the company of so many of you who care about this work and are so committed. And we're definitely moving things forward and having lots of fun along the way, which is great. So it's a great team. It's great folks that you're going to be hearing from today. And you know, the story is a good segue and context into our conversation with Hart and Jeffrey, who really, I know many of you know them, but for those of you who don't, I'll give just some quick introductions and feedback. First and foremost, Hart and Jeffrey are very, very dear friends, both to me personally and, of course, to our organization. Both are co-founders of the Peace Alliance and have been and are currently deeply involved with our work. Hart is currently the chair of our sister organization, the Peace Alliance Educational Institute, but she's also very much in the trenches with us regularly. And I'll start with Hart. Quick introductions. Hart's work, service, and activism has spanned over 5 decades, working as an educator, an activist, and a champion throughout the United States and numerous countries on environmental and animal rights issues, social justice, peace building, and gender equality. She's currently living her dream as president of the River Phoenix Center for Peace Building in honor of her son. And Jeffrey Weisberg, is the River Phoenix Center for Peace Building Executive Director. He has designed, developed, and implemented a wide range of programs and services in Gainesville, Florida, and throughout the United States. They primarily work in Gainesville. His work with youth includes peer mediation, juvenile diversion programs, youth empowerment, and coming-of-age programs. In addition, Jeffrey's using restorative practices to support the Department of Juvenile Justice, the court system, schools, and communities to bolster alternatives to the punishment model. He's also served on the board of the Peace Alliance for 8 years, though he's not on the board at present, but still very much with us in spirit. So I'll let Hart and Jeffrey do the main sharing about the River Phoenix Center for Peace Building, but just a quick description of their mission and work. The center takes a coordinated and strategic approach within a community, as well as with local and state agencies in addressing violence. With a continuum of prevention and intervention strategies that involve the general public, at-risk populations, and those that are healing from the impact of violence, the River Phoenix Center for Peacebuilding works to embed best and next practices into the complex systems that we are enmeshed in. And they are doing incredible work, and just we're thrilled to have you on this conversation, Hart and Jeffrey, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Matthew. Hello, everyone.
Hi, everyone. What a beautiful introduction, Matthew, of the Peace Alliance and the work that we're doing. I'm so moved. And thank you. Hi, everybody, those that we know and those that we don't know. It's a pleasure to be on this call. And I thought that I would start, I didn't know that you would say the things you did about really the philosophy and the story about John Lewis, but you know, what I would say, and the reason for the success that we're having here in Gainesville, and we'll talk a little bit about the programs, is that we really believe ultimately that every human being wants the same thing in life. We all want to be happy. We want our children safe. We want our streets safe. We want to be in love. We want to share and contribute in miraculous ways. And a lot of us just have different strategies, and that's usually determined, as is our behavior, by our familial and cultural upbringing. And it's kind of like, well, therefore, by the grace of the great mystery, I would be that other person. And in that sense, we really believe that we are so much more alike than we are different. And when we integrate that belief in our relationship building, we start to open up to each other. We open our own hearts so that we can hear the stories of what we oftentimes call the people we're either afraid of or the unlikely bedfellows. And that doesn't really create what we really want, which is connection, because we don't know it all. And there are pieces to the puzzle that even we, what we might call the polar opposites, that they hold and have that are very valuable and that we don't appreciate because we're closed down and protective of the truth that we know. And so this is really our strategy. It's how we go about, whether it's meeting our congressmen, whether it's meeting law enforcement or school officials, or what oftentimes is a stoic system that refuses to make changes, we don't look at it like that. We look at them as individuals, as human beings that have a different perspective, and we work together to reframe what would really work in the community to create the safety and the support that we all need in order to have the vibrancy and the health that we so yearn for. And you know, I would say that we do the same with the young people that we work with that are in the juvenile justice system, that are in probation, that are in jails, and the adults that we work with that are in prison and that have committed crimes, and some of them pretty heinous crimes. And that everyone has their story. And just as we work with restorative justice, it's not look what you did, but it's what happened to you. What happened to you, and how can we help resource you and the inner being that that is starving in a sense. So that, I want to say, is the connection that attracted me to the Peace Alliance in the first place, because we all held that and still do. We hold that as our foundational piece, that we are the beloved community and that everyone belongs there. And whatever measures we can take to help make that happen, whether it's prevention, intervention, interruption, healing, we're gonna do it, and we're gonna use the least punitive actions in order to become successful. So I just wanted to put that out there because I feel like that is the nugget that if we all get that, we are gonna continue to fly forward. And I just want to say that because Jeffrey really did create a lot of the curriculum, I feel like he's gonna be the guy that's gonna talk to you a little bit about what we're doing.
Hello, everybody. I just also wanna start by saying what deep appreciation I have for the kind of activism and showing up for these causes of bringing more justice, more peace, more connectivity within communities, within organizations, within families, because ultimately that, as Hart and Matthew were saying, is, I think, that central theme of the beloved community. How do we learn to connect and respect and understand our differences and our similarities? And so we, this River Phoenix Center for Peace Building really got a huge part of its start from our work with the Peace Alliance, or the Department of Peace legislation. That is a slow-moving ship, as we all might relate to. And for that kind of legislation to happen is going to take a lot of coordinated efforts to manifest. And so we decided, let's take those principles of the Department of Peace legislation and bring it into a local model where we could then highlight and promote and facilitate those best and next practices, and with the ultimate goal of embedding them so that it becomes, I don't like this word institutionalized, but whatever other word would go with that that would fit better, where it just becomes a part of the new culture within the Department of Juvenile Justice, the State Attorney's Office, within schools. And what I want to say is that it is happening. it is occurring on such a wonderful and significant level in so many parts throughout the country that it gives us a lot of hope and encouragement that on so many different levels of the conversation and within legislation and within policies that these different practices are becoming commonplace. And there's still lots of work to do. And so what we've discovered as part of our niche is that we want to help develop and expand the emotional intelligence, the social-emotional learning component of peace building. And what I mean by that is that violence does not happen in a vacuum. It happens because we've been influenced and we have these other factors that have occurred in our lives. And when we can take that into account and bring in the antidote or those positive resources to address those challenges, that is a strategy that we feel like is fundamental in making the shift from the punitive-based model of justice to one of restorative. And so we've developed a communication and self-esteem series for 8 weeks that is endorsed by the Department of Juvenile Justice, so much so that they actually pay for it, and they give the kids 100% bonus community service hours. So for every hour they're in class, they get 2 hours of credit. When they finish all 8 hours or eight sessions, they get a bonus of 5 hours. And at the end, the kids teach the class back to their probation officers and family. And then we hire one or two of those youth to become youth leaders for the next series. And so that communication self-esteem philosophy and curriculum really infuses every program that we do, because what we've found is that so many of the young people who are in the criminal justice system have experienced various levels of trauma and what's called adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs. And what we're able to do is link the number of those ACEs, whether it's neglect or witnessing violence or abuse, divorce, a parent going to prison, so many of those different experiences really do affect children's development, literally affecting their brain development. And so when we can bring in some of those emotional intelligence components, we're seeing a significant support in building resilience. And when young people can have these resiliency factors and protective factors that help them handle life stressors, then they're much better able to cope with and stay in school and work towards their goals and dreams. So that's being instituted in many of the different schools, and we're doing it in prisons now and detention centers and so forth. Another program that we're doing is our Youth Police Dialogue. And this is aimed to address what's called DMC, or RED, racial and ethnic disparity. And this simply means that there's more black and brown youth entering the criminal justice system than white kids. And so what we want to do is train officers and law enforcement to understand adolescent brain development and the fight or flight response that young people have, and that officers can use different de-escalation techniques and empathy to try to calm the situation down and address really what's going on, holding young people accountable, but also implementing different strategies that keep them out of the criminal justice system. And we're finding a profound impact on both young people and officers. There is resistance, for sure, with some of the cops, but what we're finding throughout the department is that it's changing the culture, because by bringing these kids and cops together and for them to see what's beneath the waterline, their humanity, that kids are going, wow, I had no idea the cops could be, you know, so cool, or that they could be, you know, that they could have kind intentions for me as a young person. And then for the officers to feel like not all kids deserve punishment and that they deserve a second or third chance. And that these initiatives that we're doing, as well as our trauma responsive community initiative, all of these different practices and approaches are looking at how can we bring in the collaboration and partnership and inform and educate the community, both kids and adults, across a broad spectrum to look at peace building through a new lens, that they have a contribution to make, that their goals and dreams are valid, and that the strategies within schools and the criminal justice system, mental health, and so forth, can be adjusted and informed in even simple ways that are making a huge impact. And so our overall goal is to create a model that then can be translated into other communities around the country and the world. And in 2016, we're going to host a two-week intensive for people to come from around the country to learn our philosophy and our curriculum, and then they could take all or some of that back to their communities to embed these into their own systems. And I think I'll stop there, Matthew, if that's good.
That's great. It's incredible and so inspiring to hear all updates on all this work. Let's open it up to folks, and anybody who has questions, if you want to push the one key on your keypad, please do so and chat with Hart and Jeffrey. One question to kick it off with, or just kind of one area of, you know, you mentioned restorative processes, restorative justice. What have you guys been seeing both in terms of your own use of it and how do you use it, and I know there's many other words for it, but also around the country, what have you been like noticing over these last few years around that field, which is getting a lot of attention lately?
Well, it's getting a lot of attention, and it's clear, and I do think it has a lot to do with what we're all doing, you know, that you know, Molly's work and Peace Alliance, you know, kind of focusing on it, and certainly the work in Colorado. But I'll say that here in Gainesville, we have a grant, which it's actually historic. Generally, they don't like to go near Battery with restorative justice, but we have a grant to work with kids that have either hit or hurt their parents or grandparents or siblings, and instead of them they're being arrested, they send them to us. And it has been amazing. I think we've done probably 15 cases. You know, it's fairly new. And every one of them has ended up with an agreement and an understanding of, you know, what happened. And virtually what we find and what I think is most effective about restorative justice is that you start to see a much bigger picture of what's going on in the family of the kids that are supposedly the offender. And you start to see that, oh my goodness, this family needs resources. They need parenting classes. They need all kinds of things. And that becomes part of the agreement. So it becomes that when somebody does something wrong, it's not punitive in a sense. Instead, it is so, it's absolutely resourced by the many, in every community has all these different either nonprofits or governmental agencies that have programs that can, you know, that can help families that are in poverty or just young parents that are 14, 15 years old that their whole life has been a certain way. It's not that way anymore.
The only thing I would add, that's beautiful, Hart, is that most people don't know about restorative justice. And so I think the work that we can do as activists in these different groups is to continue to put the work itself out there and to share statistics. And there's a ton of little videos that help educate. And that by doing that and then being able to demonstrate it, that the work in so many ways speaks for itself. And so that would be one of my suggestions, is that get educated on what restorative justice is, what it looks like, some of the statistics, and then just keep gently informing school principals and people in law enforcement and in decision-making positions of what it is and what it can be and ask for a pilot. And when it's done well, and I think you do need to be trained, that so often it will speak for itself.
That's great. That's good advice, too. If you know of any good videos, by the way, Jeffrey, send them to me and I'll share them with the team so they can watch them and share them.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, thank you. Cool, let's go to the lines here. We've got a few people with their hands raised. I'll start with Peggy in Ohio. Hi, Peggy.
Hello, how are you? Hey, this is just so much what we need, and I've got a long background since 1968 as a foster home, and so we've done a lot with the courts and what have you. I want what you have. I know there's programs here in our community, but the way you describe what you all are doing just sounds so much better. So, Matt just said about sending the videos. What do you have that I can concretely bring to some of these parties, within Children's Services or with our Project Woman or, our court system? What tools can we emulate from what you have as opposed to what I think happens is we just keep doing the same old thing?
Great question.
Well, we are, as I may have said, we're still young. We are in many ways babies in this, in the sense that we've only been doing this particular approach for about 3 years. And, so there's, in order to have trust, there also has to be competence. So in other words, one has to have more than just good intentions to really change some of these systems. They need to see it in action. And so my recommendation, whether it's the restorative justice or communication skill building, nonviolent communication, the police youth dialogue, there's so many different things that are out there around being able to offer one piece to start with that you do well. And that, Dot Maver, many of you know, she was our executive director when we started, and I was the director of programs, and she's moved on, but she's still on our board. And she brought this word called solutionaries to us. And it's not her word, but it's such a fabulous word that speaks to the solutions and the good work that is happening and that's constructive versus what's wrong. And so in any of those kinds of relationships, we go, as Matthew and the Peace Alliance teaches so well, and that's where we learned it when we're lobbying, is that we're going in with acknowledgement, appreciation, and what works, not what doesn't. Not that we put our head in the sand. And so my recommendation is, and we could have another call about it in more detail, but it's really looking at what is the specific need of the community, and what exists around the country. And so maybe you have something specific that you want more of, but just, so that would be someone like you could come to this training where you would learn our trauma responsive community initiative. We're doing something called Peace Through Sports, where we train coaches to have a trauma-sensitive coaching approach. And look at the areas where you could have leverage to get more and more people to be able to be peace builders, or the police youth dialogue, the communication self-esteem, the restorative justice. Those are the different components that we'll have in the training center. So I know that that wasn't that specific, but we don't have a whole lot yet that we can send you. That's our major goal that we're working on for this year.
I will say anything. Maybe we could have a talk off. Maybe we could have a talk off record or offline. What I will say is that we really believe that every community or every city needs a specific entity that holds all of what we're talking about, so that it's not a person, because there's no way. I mean, what happens is one thing leads to another. From working with DJJ, then all of a sudden the police heard about it. And then from working with the school system, someone else heard it. And then before long, our phones keep ringing and ringing and ringing. It's not like we're even going out looking for it. So when people know there's something happening, you know, what is the saying, you know, you build the field and everybody comes or something like that?
Build it and they will come.
So, and then it takes, you have to have the knowledge and the ability to facilitate. We just can't bring programs to people and say, here, do this. As Jeffrey said, they have to be in action.
I'm very excited about what you're saying, because we have a new coalition here made up of all the entities you just talked about, and they're under the umbrella called Partners Against Violence Every Day. And that would be the group that would start incorporating these kinds of things, and it includes the police and the fire department, the schools. I'm excited.
Well,
thank you very much.
Well, and what I would say to you, tell me your name, Pam or Peggy?
Peggy Hannah, H-A-N-N-A.
Peggy. Great. Well, what I would say is that we are looking for communities that are in a position to take this model. And so maybe at some point we could have a conference call with that whole group, and we could talk about what we're doing and look at you know, what components you guys would most like to start with, and maybe send somebody down for that training and start building that network this year.
Good. Exciting. Thank you. How do we follow up now? I mean, Matthew?
Matthew will give you information.
Yeah, we'll connect. And in just a minute, I'll share. There's a lot of good resources in our new Cornerstones of Peacebuilding, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. So I'll weave it in then. And also just for everybody to know, many of you who are advocates for the Youth Promise Act, the structure that the Youth Promise Act creates could, in a sense, be a not as robust as what Hart and Jeffrey are doing by any means, but could empower that kind of stuff through the Promise Coordinating Councils. And we've been pushing hard to get, for example, restorative justice put into this new bill for the Youth Promise Act, and we're very hopeful, and there's a good possibility that will happen. So, you know, there's such a beautiful connection and relationship between all this, and I'll talk more in a minute. But let's get to one more person before we have to wrap up. Let's go to Nancy.
Hey, hi. Thank you, Hart and Jeffrey, both for your work with Peace Alliance and this really inspiring work. I'm wondering if you work with all ages of young people, and if there's a difference in the way you work with different ages of kids.
Hi, Nancy. Good to hear your voice.
How are you?
Good, thank you. You know, we really work primarily with ages like 11 to 24 in terms of youth. We don't work much with younger kids because our first introduction was, hey, can you guys work in the Department of Juvenile Justice with kids who get on probation? And so younger kids generally don't get on probation. So that's kind of where one of the biggest needs is that we've found. However, obviously early childhood development and all of those components are so, so important. At this point, it's a matter of capacity, that we have two full-time people and about six part-time people, very part-time people that are some of our trainers. But we would love to be able to bring in nonviolent communication and other communication and self-esteem programs to the youngest kids. We do a program, we call it Youth Leadership, and we do it at a middle school, and it was for 9 weeks twice a week. And we've done it three times, and they liked it so much that now we're 12 weeks three times a week, and they pay for it. And we're seeing huge results from these kids who get referrals, and we'd like to just bring it younger and younger. So, but at the moment, it's mostly middle school on up.
So just two last things, Matt. I know the time's running out. One of it is that we are part of this trauma responsive community, and that is for early childhood. So that is starting big time, because if we catch kids early, especially kids when you notice the signs of trauma, there's a lot that we can do to build their resilience. So that's number one. We're working with pediatricians and doctors and nurses and mental health people and law enforcement to train to see that. And number two, I just want you to know, which is really important, that we're basically funded by all these different agencies. They write grants and then they hire us to do this. So that's a really key component. They want these programs and money is there. And that's how we'll close. Thank you for this opportunity.
That's powerful. Yeah. Anything you want to share to wrap it up? Any last comments?
Well, I'm personally very excited about the Pillars of Peace, because I think it speaks to, you know, everything that needs to be brought into the conversation, and it is very important. It's everything that we do, from the personal to the family to the community. And it brings us into the international, because we believe this model can work all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a vision to have a center in Jerusalem, and I believe it's going to happen. The my closing remark would be that I don't have a college degree. I have 2 years of college, and for years I felt like I don't have enough of what it takes to make a contribution. And even 2 years ago, I said, I will never work with cops. I'll never train cops. And now I'm the lead facilitator for this youth adult dialogue. And what I want people to know who feel some insecurity, or do I have enough training or enough this or that, that it's about starting somewhere and getting really, really comfortable with the material and the ability to navigate difficult emotions. And when you can hold the space for difficult emotions, that makes a huge contribution for a breakthrough in conflict dynamics. So just keep practicing and find a good coach, and just thank you all for the good work that you're doing. And thank you, Matthew.
Mm-hmm. Thank you both. That's so awesome. This work is like the most inspiring work. It's just like, it's it. And I know Hart and I talk a lot about, gosh, we'd love for the Peace Alliance and our Educational Institute to grow into helping it to spread even more. And, of course, you guys are doing that. So this will be an ongoing live conversation, and we're just really grateful. Also, for any of you who want to learn more, there's a lot of good information on their website, including some good videos about their work, at www.centerforpeacebuilding.org. And it's also on our website on the alert for this call. So go check it out and learn more, and we're really grateful to you guys. And, of course, we get to work with you in all kinds of other ways too. But thank you, and feel free to stay on. You don't have to leave, but just going to wrap and move forward.
Thank you.
Awesome. You bet.
Yay. Take care. Good. Well, just a few quick announcements, and then we'll move into some grassroots victories and shares. This coming October, we're really excited. We're having our first conference in quite a few years in Washington. It's going to be on October 16th through the 20th. And these are really incredible experiences. It's, for those of you who have been to them before, you know, but some of you who have not, it's such a kind of a peak experience to go there. First of all, you're with all kinds of people that believe in what you believe in and share your values, and it's so great to connect and meet people, and including people in your own area. But also then, you know, and hear great speakers, hear amazing speakers. We have a very bold and robust list of folks we're reaching out to, which we'll make announcements on in the coming months. But then to go and walk the halls of Congress in Washington and meet with your electeds and meet with staffers and build those relationships and bring this message, everything Hart and Jeffrey were talking about, those programs, you know, we can be those champions for those programs. All the time we can be, but to do it in D.C. is a really special thing. So just put those dates down in your calendar. keep your attention on that. We'd love to have all of you join us. It's a really incredible experience, and you'll be hearing more and more about that as the days and weeks progress. Most of you saw this last week and a half, 2 weeks, the Department of Peacebuilding legislation was reintroduced into Congress, and we've got our petitions up, so that's very exciting. Many thanks to our Department of Peace team who've been working on that. And Nancy's on, and she'll share a little bit about some of her process in just a minute. Also, the Youth Promise Act is coming up soon in both the Senate and the House. We're working with other folks, including some offices, to get some good senators on board to introduce it. So that'll be soon, very soon, when it'll be reintroduced. But we can still do all our work getting them prepped our senators and Congress members prepped to sign on as initial co-sponsors. And then lastly, we've been talking about these peace-building cornerstones. We're going to launch in the next month a really exciting new initiative where we're really packaging all this work that we talk about all the time, pretty much everything Hart and Jeffrey were talking about today, you know, plus some more categories of really, it's kind of like a roadmap of key peace-building areas that we want to see happen in our culture. And we have some great resources. And Peggy, earlier when you were asking Hart and Jeffrey about what, you know, where are these resources, where can we learn, we're going to have on each cornerstone, and one of those cornerstones, for example, is humanizing justice. And in that, there's a lot of good restorative justice resources. But we have, I won't go through the cornerstones now. Some of you have seen them. But they each will have great resources for different kinds of work that we want to champion, good statistics, good links to organizations doing the work. So that's a good resource as well to learn and start to find, you know, other groups around the country that might have trainings and trainers, et cetera, if you want to get involved in the actual programmatic work. So that's coming up this month. We're calling it Be the Movement, Take a Step for Peace, that will change our world and in our lives, in your life, in our communities, and among nations. And we really are going to be pushing this next few years to really kind of help frame what we want to see happen in the world. So we're excited about that, and keep your eyes and ears peeled for it. That's it for the announcements. I'd like to do now is start with some grassroots victories, and just have we have a couple of folks that agreed previously to share their stories about what's been working for them, what they've been up to. They've each had a couple of fun victories, and you know, also what are the challenges? What's the story here about how you've been doing this? We all have the capacity, as Jeff said so beautifully, you know, regardless of what place we're in, where we're at in our lives, whether we've ever done any activism before or not, to really learn and become a bigger part of making this change happen. And we're here to help make that happen. And all of these people that are going to share today and everybody who's been a part of this started in that same place. They just started where they were at and they moved forward. So would love to start with Cheryl. Would you like to start today and share a little update on what's been going on?
Sure. I don't know if Jeffrey and Hart are still there, but if you are, hello.
They're still here.
I'm from Gainesville, Florida. And a year ago, almost a year ago this month, Dan and Sally came down and started an action team. And the very first thing, and I became the leader, but the very first thing that I did was to make contact with the Gainesville Sun, the editor of the editorial page. And I think that's really important, is making connections with people that have a little bit of influence in the community. And what has happened from that is that we have had, my group has had 3 or 4 op-eds published. The editor has written several editorials and mentioned the Peace Alliance and what we were trying to do and the YPA. So that was really critical. The other thing that's really important, and Nancy, if you're there, joining the Juvenile Justice Council for me was very, very important, and finding an organization that has all the stakeholders from your town in it is a really wonderful way to make connections with people. the biggest thing that's happened so far is that we had two meetings with Congressman Yoho, who is the congressman from our county, and Harp and two of our members went to meet with Congressman Yoho, and I happened to be up in D.C. Lobbying at that on that day. So they talked to him about the Youth Promise Act. And then just recently, I had a meeting with him. I've been very persistent, and we've been writing letters and not letting this go. Persistence, I think, is the main word. But just recently, I was able to convince Congressman Yoho to come to one of our meetings, our Juvenile Justice Council meetings, which is made up of all the stakeholders in Alachua County, and I think in Circuit 8, and Hart and Jeffrey are part of that too. It was pretty amazing because what we realized was that we all have the same values, and we actually do have common goals. Whether we agree with politics or not, we have to be nice to each other, and we have to understand that we're working toward one goal. And what was really amazing was that when I asked him to come, I asked him to come because we wanted to share with him why he should co-sponsor the Youth Promise Act. And so a group of us started talking to him at this meeting about what we needed in Alachua County and why the Youth Promise Act would be so helpful. Not just for us, but it's going to be for people all over the United States. So I think there's two important things. One of them is making connections and making relationships. And the other thing is being persistent and, you know, knocking at doors. I have a relationship with his legislative aide in D.C. that happened because I went lobbying up there. Over the summer. And those are the two things, persistence and relationships. And also I wanted to tell everybody, I'm from Gainesville. I've worked with Hart and Jeffrey. I've been trained by them. So if anybody wants to find out a little bit more, I can share a little bit more. And also if you want to come to Gainesville, give me a call because I'll help that make that happen.
Great. Thank you, Cheryl. That's so inspiring. And that, what I love is it's like, you know, it is a step-by-step process. It's just taking one step. You pull one thread. It leads to something. Sometimes there's bumps in the road. I know we've gotten all kinds of emails and phone calls over this last year from you going, wait, what? What am I supposed to do? This happened, and oh, I don't know. And then it just keeps happening, and then one thing leads to another. And then to be in a room with powerful folks who are telling powerful stories with your member of Congress, who, by the way, is a Tea Party Republican, not that there's anything wrong with that necessarily. You know, that's really, it can really be magical. And so thank you for sharing that. And I know you've been on your own journey and just you've just kept up with it and kept pushing yourself. And it's just been beautiful to watch and very inspiring. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Nancy, we're a little behind, no pressure, but would love for you to still share because it's just been incredible work happening, especially with you and the team. But please share a little bit about the Department of Peace and how you've been helping to steer that.
Okay, well, I want to thank everybody for their comments about the beloved community because I think what everybody on this call and in the organization are doing is really important. One of the tenets of the Peace Alliance is to empower civic activism, and I think that you, in that sense, we really succeeded as far as Department of Peace building and other things. But I have to agree with Cheryl, 100% persistence and relationship building are very key. As most of you know, and Matthew just said, we relaunched the Department of Peace Building Act just a week and a half ago, I think it was. We started out, those who've been working on this, just like all of you, just being interested in the organization, taking small actions and bigger actions as we went along. building relationships, going to lobbying, Mother's Day pie meetings, and all that kind of stuff, and turned it into having a very good relationship with Congresswoman Barbara Lee's office when it became apparent Dennis Kucinich wouldn't be coming back to Congress in 2013. We asked her to sponsor the bill, and she did agree, and then we asked if she would be interested in learning from our experience what people were saying about the bill, and that led to us helping rewrite the 2013 bill, and then we helped rewrite to a smaller degree the 2015 bill. So some of the challenges along the way, I guess, have been just keeping up the energy for all this, going, you know, we changed sponsors. Not everybody agreed, of course, about all the strategies and all of that, but working together, we came up with some good bills. Our group consists of really the National Department Peace Building Committee and others who've been supporting it, and the California group has been a big factor in all of this. So along the way, you know, we helped. I guess we were responsible really for the name change to Department of Peace Building and lots of other changes, and we're really grateful that Congresswoman Lee's office has been receptive, and actually we've been a big partner in all of this, everything from the rewrite to the helping with the Dear Colleague letter to getting on initial co-sponsors. So all of that.
That's incredible. Thank you.
Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Nancy. It's just, you know, we the precursor to our current action teams were, you know, also Peace Lines. I don't remember the word now. But anyway, you know, Nancy's been involved for years now. And it just to see the journey that so many of us have, I mean, myself included, you know, that we just learned and we kept doing it. And now, you know, Nancy and this group she's working with are helping to write the legislation and offering it to them. And I'm pretty sure you've never written legislation before this. Is that correct, Nancy?
No, not really.
Yeah. So, you know, it is. It's such a beautiful journey, and there's so much possible that we can create together. And just thank you, Nancy and Cheryl, for sharing those victories. And there are many more, and we'll keep sharing them every month in such inspiring ways. I'm just going to do a quick, we're behind schedule, so I'm going to quickly go over some of our stats and reporting for this last sector of all the, some of the different actions that we've been taking. First, I'll do the total to date of some of the different actions people have taken. We've had 24 letters to the editors published in the last year and a half, 17 op-eds, 56 sit-down meetings with members of Congress and or their staffers, 3 editorials published, 4 radio interviews, and then the total for this month and this year, really, this full part of the year, there have been 4 letters to the editors written and 1 published. No op-eds yet, 5 sit-down meetings with members of Congress, 3 of those are new as of this past month, 2 editorials, 1 that's new, 1 radio interview, a couple of tabling events, 12 coalition building meetings, 3 of which are new, and 1 presentation which is new. So lots happening in some areas and still plenty of room to grow. Hopefully this action today will get everybody inspired and to really dive in and get involved. For any of you who may have done an action that wasn't on this list, you know, there's sections on our website to report it, but I'll skip that for this call and just send an email to dan@peacealliance.org and he'll make sure that they're tracked on our website so that we get credit where credit's due. So quickly, let's look at our action sheet now. Which hopefully most of you have in front of you. There's 2 actions this month. There's a main one, and then we have a bonus action that we're going to encourage folks to take. And these are really the opportunity for us to, hopefully everybody who's together with their teams, or even if you're on your own, to take this action together and make this one more thing that goes to your, you know, this month it's your elected official, it's your senator that we're going to write. and really get the ball moving on some of these peace-building legislation priorities for us. So normally we'd have other folks read, but since we're behind, I'm just going to quickly read the gist of it. This month's action is to write a letter to your two senators urging them to become an initial co-sponsor of the Youth Promise Act. And of course, you can send the same letter. They're not going to know if you want to type it. Handwritten are great too, though. So let's just capitalize on all the great momentum we've helped build during the last congressional session as the new version is introduced in Congress. Please encourage your senator to have their names on the co-sponsor list when the bill is dropped. The Youth Promise Act currently has no bill numbers, but your congressmember can contact the office of the lead Senate sponsor, which will be Senator Bob Casey. It was going to be a different senator as of even a couple weeks ago, but it's now going to be Senator Bob Casey. And we will have the Republican lead soon. So they can contact their office and become an initial co-sponsor. You can call your member's local office and also the D.C. office just to kind of bolster it up. So making stronger, safer communities using proven peace-building tools and ending epidemics of youth incarceration and violence is what this action is about. And there's plenty of great tips on this action sheet that you can read together just for how to write your letter and what to follow up and where to look and make sure if they were co-sponsor, you can mention that. I'll leave that. I trust that you guys can read well at this point. And look at that. There's some great sample talking points you can use, some statistics that you can pull from in the letter. It doesn't have to be long, just something that really speaks to who you are and what you're about, and we'll get them set up so that when we introduce this bill, we've already got some momentum brewing. And then just quickly, the secondary action this month, we're going to try to do this every month. Some things that folks can do, you know, in between the action team meetings to really help move the bar. And this month we're looking at coalition building and really reaching out to one community leader or organization this month. And as both Nancy and Cheryl in particular shared, you know, building these relationships with these groups, it could be a juvenile justice coalition in your community, it could be a program, it could be a restorative justice group, it could be a mentorship program, you know, Big Brothers, Big Sisters kind of organization. Just to reach out to them and to share with them about the Youth Promise Act, what it's about, how it could be a benefit to them, and what we would like from them. And if you look at the steps in this action, you'll see that there are some clear things that we can both offer them and ask from them that can really help move this forward. It's a very important thing to do to build these meetings, and you can bring these folks to future congressional meetings, et cetera, as we build these relationships. So we'd highly encourage folks to keep that up and look at taking that on this month. So before we wrap, let's do a practice together, a laser talk, as we call it. I'm going to first, and I'll make this quick, but I'm going to first unmute everybody so that we can all take part in this. Just be mindful that everybody's live now, so if you have any background noise, to just keep it minimum and or mute yourself on your phone. You can push star 6 and or the mute button.
Hello.
Okay, so here's what I do. I'm going to read the laser talk first, and then we'll go through and have everybody participate in a quick action. And then the third time we'll do it silently, but I'll share more as we go. So here's the laser talk. On average, the annual cost of violence related only to paying for police, justice, corrections, and the productivity effect of violent crime, homicide, and robbery is over $3,000 for each U.S. taxpayer, or $460 billion for the U.S. economy. At the same time, prevention and intervention programs can help turn this around. In Chicago, the Becoming a Man program, which places disadvantaged boys from the 7th to the 10th grade into mentoring relationships, saw among their participants a 44% drop in arrests for violent crime and a 23% increase in graduation rates. The Youth Promise Act will work to help fund and implement these kinds of programs. It will work to interrupt the school-to-prison pipeline that is far too common today by supporting proven prevention and intervention strategies. So that's the laser talk. So this time what I'm going to do, and I love everybody's participation, is I'm going to read it again, but I'm going to leave blanks for some of the key statistics, and everybody who remembers, please just chime in with the answer. Just speak it out loud, and then we'll move through it, and then we'll do it a third time silently. Okay, so here I go again. On average, the annual cost of violence related only to paying for police, justice, corrections, and the productivity effect of violent crime, homicide, and robbery is over blank. How much
for each of them? $3,000 per taxpayer.
Yes, over $3,000. Or how much for the entire economy, U.S. economy?
$400 billion.
Yeah, $460 billion.
$400.
A lot of money. At the same time, what kinds of programs, what can help turn this around?
Prevention and intervention.
Prevention.
Yes, prevention and intervention.
Prevention.
In Chicago, the Becoming a Man program, which places disadvantaged boys from the 7th to 10th grade in mentoring relationships, saw among their participants a what percent drop in arrests for violent crime? 44%. And a what percent increase in graduation rates? 23%. That's pretty good. So the Youth Promise Act will work to help fund and implement these kinds of programs. It will work to interrupt the what pipeline?
School to prison pipeline.
Yep, school to prison pipeline that is far too common today by supporting proven prevention and intervention strategies. So one more time, and we'll, this time we'll do it silently. So when I leave the blank, just pause to yourself, and I'll hold it for about 3 seconds, and then I'll say the answer, just so people can work it themselves. So remember, don't say it when I leave the blank this time. On average, the annual cost of violence related only to paying for police, justice, corrections, and the productivity effect of violent crime, homicide, and robbery is over how much for each U.S. taxpayer? $3,000, over $3,000 for each U.S. taxpayer. Or it's how much for the U.S. economy? $460 billion. At the same time, what kind of programs can help turn this around? That's right, prevention and intervention programs. In Chicago, the Becoming a Man program, which places disadvantaged boys from the 7th to 10th grade into mentoring relationships, saw among their participants a what percent drop in arrests and violent crime? 44% drop. And a what percent increase in graduation rates? 23%. The Youth Promise Act will work to help fund and implement these kinds of programs. It will work to interrupt the what pipeline? School to prison pipeline that is far too common today by supporting prevention and intervention strategies. So that's the laser talk. Thanks, guys, for participating in that. I'm going to just really quickly before we wrap up the call, two things. One, for any of you who are new, who want to learn more about an action team or have any questions, I'll stay on for a few minutes after the call, so feel free to stay on. In fact, if you want to push the one key on your phone, I'll try to capture your info so we can reach out to you. That'd be great. And I just want to leave with a closing quote. This is from Brené Brown, who's a social scientist who does research on a lot of things, including vulnerability. This is from her book, Daring Greatly. When we spend our lives waiting until we're perfect or bulletproof before we walk into the arena, we ultimately sacrifice relationships and opportunities that may not be recoverable. We squander our precious time and we turn our backs on our gifts, those unique contributions that only we can make. Perfect and bulletproof can be seductive, but they don't exist in the real human experience. We must walk into the arena, whatever it may be, a new relationship, an important meeting, our creative process, a difficult family conversation, with courage and willingness to engage. Rather than sitting on the sidelines and hurling judgment and advice, we must dare to show up and let ourselves be seen. This is vulnerability. This is daring greatly. So I know you guys are all daring greatly and really appreciate each of you for all that you do. And we can all just say goodbye to each other. Those of you who raised your hand, hold on 1 second. Don't hang up. I got to capture you. But thank you all. Everybody can say bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
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 Bye.